Welcome to the Anon Podcast. In this, our second and somewhat delayed podcast, we've got an interview with the Edinburgh-based poets Andrew Phillip and Rob A. McKenzie, who've both got new collections out from Salt Publishing. We'll also tell you a few choice treats about what's going on in the heady world of Anon, and talk a little bit about why it is that we're twittering.
What does it say about me that I left it so long to move? Maybe I've left it too late.
Andrew Phillip and Rob A. McKenzie are two Edinburgh-based poets, and I invited them round to Anon headquarters, promising them soup. But unfortunately, all they got was cake and chat. I started our discussion by asking when was the first time that they had been published in a magazine?
First magazines I submitted to were student magazines. And then I didn't submit anything anywhere for quite some time after that.
What was your strategy? Did you just go to anything, or did you have particular magazines that you actually quite liked?
I tried consistently over quite a number of years Poetry Wheels. I always got very, very encouraging rejections from Poetry Wheels. Robert Minhinnick would send me back notes saying, "I like this a lot, you know, but." I learned several things, I think, from some of his little notes, you know, just one line or so of criticism. It was a valuable learning experience, I think, yeah.
I asked Andy, where was he first published?
That would probably be in Chapman. I think it was maybe four poems. Mm-hmm. And there, and that was a huge, huge boost.
Mm-hmm. And then asked Rob the same question. When did he first plunge into the world of publishing his poetry?
Well, I submitted a few poems that I'd written in the mid-80s to Iron magazine. And it was edited by a guy called Peter Mortimer. And they were terrible poems, and he rejected them, but actually gave me quite an encouraging rejection, which is very kind of them because they were bad. But in 1998 or 1999, I then started writing poetry again and submitted some of the stuff to New Writing Scotland, and that was my first acceptance. I tend to send, I have tended to send to magazines I know fairly well that I subscribe to.
Rob and Andy are both avid bloggers. Rob's blog is robmat.blogspot.com and Andy's is tonguefire.blogspot.com. I asked them a little bit about how they use their blogs as poets.
But sometimes I would put up rough drafts of poems. They're always drafts rather than the finished article. Now actually I don't really even put up many drafts at all.
And what's your policy on that, Andy? Do you put many poems up in your blog or?
No, not many. I have sometimes put drafts up on the blog. I remember when I saw how many Rob was putting up on his blog, and I was quite surprised actually. But on the other hand, it's also quite interesting to see the comments that people make on draft poems, and that can sometimes be quite useful. I think it almost depends on whether you have anybody else that you share poems with and how deeply you trust their comments.
It's a two-way thing. You know, I know some people have probably discovered, when I say discovered my writing, that sounds very grand, but you know, I've come across my writing anyway. Through the blog, but I've also come across other people's writing through their blogs and websites as well. You know, it's opened up things. You know, I've found writers in America and Australia I would never have come across, and very good writers as well.
I then asked Rob, how's it he got into blogging in the first place?
Yeah, I'd read a few other people's blogs, a few folk I knew were doing it, so I thought I'll just try it, and I never really expected it to last more than, you know, maybe a few weeks or a few months. And I think one thing, it just keeps going, and I feel like I'm going to stop it at some point, but it's not easy to know when that point arrives.
I enjoy the conversation. That's why I've kept it going, you know. And I know there's such a vast array of blogs out there, and there's so much conversation going on. It's fascinating to trace the conversations between blogs sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Then asked what were Rob's favourite blogs.
There's some good stuff. I mean, Well, I suppose it's one like George Surtees. I don't know how he manages to do it, because he's a full-time job and he's a prominent poet, a very prominent poet. And he manages to write consistently interesting stuff every day. Bernardine Evaristo is another person with quite a new blog, but manages to post, not absolutely every day, but always good posts all the time.
So this is a podcast that we're recording. Do you listen to poetry podcasts?
I do listen to them now and again, but just to, you know, sometimes via the blogs, actually, you know, somebody's done a podcast and it sounds interesting, or through The Guardian and things like that. Sometimes I'll just listen to something. So I do listen to them.
There's a great site called Poetcasting. I don't know, you know, if you've explored that much, Rob, but it's a fantastic site with growing number of poets on it. It is purely poetry. So it's not, you know, there's not a podcast in the sense of conversation or whatever. So I mean, it's a great mix of what's going on in UK and British Isles at the moment.
We're now going to hear Rob reading from some of his poems, and after that, continue our conversation.
This is called Fallen Villages of the North. I wrote this after I'd been on holiday down in South Yorkshire, and on the way home, I was looking out the window of the car, and there was all these strange place names. That was one of the things I noticed. And another thing was that there was all these fields, you know, that had various crops and things growing in them. But as well as that, there was various fairgrounds, and which never seemed to be completely inactive. Perhaps because it was pouring with rain. But I thought it was really strange. They were almost like ghost towns, except, you know, big wheels and, you know, ghost trains and things like that just seem to always rise out of the earth. And this is where the idea, the impetus for the poem began. So, Fallen Villages of the North. Given the unreliable climate on the moors, Long Horseless Priest supplies intercession for pineapple experiments at Popper Haw and genetically modified okra in Cockle Park. Although he is diminutive in height, his giant thumbs drum up post-lapsarian boredom long before the drone of cauliflower florets ripens to a ceremonial trumpeting at fairground season. Time for merry-go-rounds to recycle appearances, for technology to calculate the caterpillar train's freight capacity during its climactic right-angled nosedive. The rain runs amok with a chemical stink. Cabbage allotments between rival cheroplanes raise leaves to heaven, green umbrellas punctured in the heart of hail-bitten earth. The old-timers still believe in growth by steady grace, though most are stunted, which keeps in mind their need for God and love to sling thunderclouds above evil shill bottles' battered crepe-stall awnings, to give hurricanes the run of its skyscraping big wheel. Bananas, force-fed ethylene, sweat carbon dioxide. The priest's basso profundo shakes coconuts from the sky. And did those feet, through sunburn, sandblast and snowstorm, while all weather saviours drop like shells in triumph to the leaky inflatable slide. This one's called The Loser. I wrote this the day after the American election. It's not a very celebratory poem. I was delighted when Obama won, but at the same time I'm cynical enough to still think that the people who were in power still have a lot of power and a lot of influence, and it's going to be a long, hard slog over the next few years. And this is what the poem is saying, although it says it in a very symbolic way, so it might not be completely obvious. Anyway, I'm going to read it. It's called The Loser. He lost with a symbolic victory secured. Deep in the forest, acolytes resurrected him from dying leaves, crisp and with a throat of fire, but no heat, no light, only autumn lit the eyes. His arms olive, backside birch, ponytail willow, connected by shade, congealed in smur, eschewing the crutch of twig or bone. He mounted his plinth and raised a fist of triumphant pine. The winds could have blown. Instead, they beat out terms of supremacy behind closed doors, hailed deadlock as democracy, and flung a nailed down table through the triple glazing as evidence of purpose, catalyst for a national year of rain, and so on, towards a mulch kingdom, mosquito hatchery. His opponents wasted time waving matches at the weather. He dripped, became unrecognisable and in control.
Both those poems are from Rob A. McKenzie's new book, The Opposite of Cabbage, which is published by Salt Publishing. Our discussion then moved on to the opportunities for poets in Scotland to nurture their craft.
There's a lack of things in Scotland. Down in London, they've got the Poetry School. Mm. They've got some very high-profile workshops by very good poets like John Stammers and Roddy Lumsden and people like that. And in other parts of England too, there's things happening. I know in the north of England, there's various kind of things run through the poetry business. And there's these sort of structured events and workshops.
Events and workshops that are not connected to universities.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously there's the creative writing world, the university, the academic side of it, which is sort of growing, well, all over the place, but there are several courses in Scotland. But not everybody can do that. Mm-hmm. It's not the kind of commitment that everybody can manage financially and time, So
I think, for writers in Scotland, we've kind of lagging behind a wee bit in the last 10, 15 years or so, since the big explosion of Scottish writing in the beginning of the 90s, I suppose. There's been no Scottish Eric Gregory winner for 14, 15 years. And I think part of that is because there isn't that infrastructure of help mm-hmm. and support and encouragement and mentorship mm-hmm. for young writers, but also for writers like my middle-aged writers like myself, who would have benefited from these kind of things had they been available.
And I often wonder as well, actually, about the growth of the creative writing courses to a certain extent. When I was a student, Edinburgh didn't have a creative writing course. Those were American things, basically. And there was the one in the University of East Anglia, I think. I don't think there was much else besides. There was the one at St Andrews as well, which obviously is quite long standing. There was quite a vibrant poetry society at Edinburgh Uni at the time. And obviously, with student societies, vibrancy comes and goes depending on who's involved. And you can never depend on anything, even continuing. Any momentum continuing over into the following year, let alone beyond that. But I often wonder whether that kind of focus on creative writing courses per se actually is detrimental to the opportunities for writers who are not in the English, student writers who are not in the English department, as I wasn't, because I studied linguistics.
I think we have to have confidence in our poetry and sell our poetry and read our poetry and it will gather an audience, even from people who don't normally read it. And I think that's the way to do it. I was reading in Facebook today, there's a Salt poet from America called Shandell Beers, and she's got a photograph of herself holding her new book for the first time. And somebody wrote in to comment in the photograph saying, "My husband has the book. He doesn't think, he's never thought he liked poetry, but he won't let me have the book back." And I thought, that's what you want. You want somebody you want an attractive book, you want people who are good at reading, and get your poetry over that way and have confidence in it. It'll find an audience, even from people who don't normally read it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I'd agree entirely with that.
We'll now hear Andrew Phillip reading from his collection, The Ambulance Box, which is also available from Salt Publishing.
This poem's called Pedestrian. Was actually, although you wouldn't know it from the poem, it started off life as me trying to write about a friend of my wife's who had taken her own life. But I wanted it to be a sort of celebratory poem, a poem that celebrated this woman's life, rather than anything depressing. So this is kind of, it took on its own direction anyway, so this is Pedestrian. Someone was standing in the middle of the road. She stood astride it, just beyond the blind spot on a sharp countryside bend, so hidden that I nearly ran her over. At first, she seemed an ordinary figure. Jeans, a fitted T-shirt, long brown hair, but for the confidence with which she stood where any car would slam straight into her. Almost as soon as we jerked to a halt and I got out the car to remonstrate, the space around her ruptured with the opening of wings, as colourful as the flocks of paradise. She stretched her hand towards me, said, "I know you'll take good care of it," and poured from her palm into mine a sleeping child, scarcely the size of a nut and sprouting from its belly a shoot topped off by a tiny leaf. I tried to ask the obvious questions, but she folded herself from our vision. I felt her gift stir slightly, though it slept as soundly as it does now in my hand. How can I drive on with this entrusted to me? I'm rooted here, keeping watch on the growth of what is planted in my palm, this difficult, unasked for joy. This next poem is in Scots. It's kind of an, I suppose it's an elegy in a way. An important strand, very important strand of this collection is poems that either deal with or touch on obliquely the death of my son, my first child, who died very shortly after he was born. In fact, the book's dedicated to him. So this poem is called Coronach, which actually is a Gaelic word, and it means it's part of a Gaelic lament. I'll see if there's a couple of words that you might be good to gloss. Wachant, of course, is weakened. Strochlin is struggling. Calar is fresh, clear. Dival is to fall silent. And the smur, if you've ever encountered it, if you've ever been in Scotland, you've probably encountered the smur. Certainly if you've lived any length of time in Scotland, you'll know fine what a smur is, that absolutely soaking light drizzle. This is Coronach. They did breakfast quite like it were table. They tack their seats afore we're walking, waiting soonless on a taste of warmth. They click us by our arms to talk about the affairs of death, strochlin to fin a callar voice. We hae nocht to say to the deed, nocht are our muckle. Mair nor a body can bear to speak out, mair nor a word or a life can haud. Syne we sit and listen day after day, ettlin for the wee bit word that'll gar the stunning in our hearts to fall. And the deed bide anent us in our kitchen, their whispering voices, a sooch of pain, a seasonless smur on the glass.
And here's a short plug for Rob and Andy's book launch, which is in Edinburgh.
The event is going to be at the Scottish Poetry Library at 7 o'clock on Wednesday the 11th of March. There's going to be some wine, and there's going to be some, you know, finger food, little crisps anyway. And we're both going to be launching, and if you want to go, though, you have to email the Scottish Poetry Library.
Yeah, so Rob will be reading, and I'll be reading as well, and the books will be on sale, of course, at the event itself, so you can buy a copy and get it signed.
So if you hear this podcast before that date, then feel free to go along. And if you hear it after that date, then you missed a great event. Well, thanks to Andy and Rob for giving their time to talk to us at Anon. Things are heading on in the heady world of Anon. We now have the ability to buy Anon via PayPal. So if you go along to www.anonpoetry.co.uk, you can take advantage of our special four-issue offer. That's only £11.99 for the first four issues off and on, or buy a single issue or take out a subscription. We also have a Twitter account, and our Twitter name is Anon Poetry. And I've been very surprised at how many poets there are on Twitter. Now, for those of you who might not know what Twitter is, it's what's called a microblogging website, and it forces you to say what it is that you want to convey in 140 characters or less. And I think that essential element of compression that's required is very attractive to people who are perhaps naturally drawn to poetry. So if you'd like to come and see us on Twitter, we're Anon Poetry, and just follow us as a friend. On our next podcast, we have Ryan Van Winkle, the reader in residence at Edinburgh City Libraries. But until then, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye. This podcast was presented by Non's editor, Colin Fraser, featured Andrew Phillip and Robbie McKenzie, and the music was by the fantastic Benedict Young.
My breast pocket bulging with a packet of fags, my trousers worn throughout the knee. I took the Northern Line up to Brent Cross and I got ready to hitchhike to Leeds. My school bag slung over my shoulder as windshields glared in the sun. I flagged down a travelling salesman with a francophone flick of my thumb. Habibi, can't you remember? Habibi, don't you remember? England land, where we first fell in love.